Welcome to Phantom Island, presented by Homefield. My name is Stephen Godfrey at 38 Godfrey, Stephen Godfrey on Blue Sky. Today we're going to talk about, well, it's just frankly the hottest sports thing going. I know what you're thinking. I can already hear you talking about it. Yeah, it's the UFL. Of course it is. Ryan and I are going to ask a couple questions about what defines success in minor league football and if it's even possible to pursue a successful minor league football arrangement, plus or minus the NFL. Anyways, we're going to get into all that with guest Justice Mosqueda. And on top of that, I'm going to talk to you very briefly about phantomisland.show. One more time, phantomisland.show. That is our new subscription service. Starting this week, the next episode that you will receive in your feed, if you are not a subscriber, will just be a free preview. And it will cut off at a certain point, and then you'll hear my lovely voice again telling you, imploring you, begging you to subscribe, to support our program, to support our production company. You can go to phantomisland.show and do that starting at $10 a month. If you want to ask questions, get involved with the show, suggest future topics for one of these different formats, you could do all those things. You go to phantomisland.show. But if you just want to get all the content we have, $10 a month, you can get a discount plan if you sign up annually. It's $100 a year. phantomisland.show. Now, let's move along with this totally free Phantom Island podcast. Ryan, can you name all the UFL cities and teams? Go.
I don't know.
Any.
I can't.
Can you give me some?
St. Louis Battlehawks.
One.
Birmingham, it's a horse. Stallions?
Good, two.
DC Defenders?
You're on it. Dude, you're killing it.
Does Memphis have a team?
It does.
I don't know the name of it. There's a Memphis team. I think there's a San Antonio team.
Okay.
Is there a Houston team? Houston Roughnecks? Is that right?
Good, good, good.
God.
You're almost done.
I think I'm running out. I don't think I can do anymore.
They play in a baseball stadium that never should have been built.
That's so many. I mean, that's so many.
That's not in Florida.
I was going to say, you're throwing me off. I don't think there's a Tampa team. No, I'm out. Just tell me the rest.
The Arlington Renegades.
Okay,
sure. The Memphis Showboats.
Memphis Showboats.
You said Houston Roughnecks.
Yeah.
And then you got the Michigan Panthers?
No, okay. I forgot. I should have.
It's funny. You jumped straight to the St. Louis Battlehawks, right?
Yeah.
Mm. Why?
You want my truthful answer?
Because it's a cool name. A
couple weeks ago, I saw a guy in a St. Louis Battlehawks shirt at the Y.
Wait, really?
Yes. And it reminded me.
Wait, you saw a human being in the wild 100%. Outside of the city that
Yes, far from wearing a Battlehawks.
We're like a 4-hour drive.
I mean, yeah, but I wouldn't call this Battlehawks country.
It's where everyone in Nashville goes to buy legal weed. Wow. Okay. I'm so thrown by that anecdote. Yeah. I may just toss this entire show up.
Okay.
All right. Have you watched the UFL game this year?
No.
Okay. Did you watch one last year?
No.
Did you watch the XFL / USFL, like the sort of before they joined 2 years ago?
I'm going to be very honest here. I think the last of these spring leagues that I watched was, the AAFL? This is like the pre-COVID league.
Okay, yeah. So we're talking plus 5 years ago. Yeah. Okay.
All right. That some of these teams are, I think, like the Battlehawks were started there.
Okay. So worst thing you can do in podcasting is basically just like focus group of one, and we're just going to create.
Here we are.
Big old echo chamber.
We should have gotten that guy I saw at the gym.
Yeah, clearly. Let's bring him on the show. Let's accost random people at the YMCA and bring him on the show.
If you go to the Green Hills YMCA and you are wearing a Battlehawks shirt, reach out to the podcast and we'll have you on.
Are we doxing?
A little, but
we're doxing good taste.
It's fine.
Would it surprise you that the UFL television ratings are down?
No.
Dramatically.
Well, what down from what?
Okay, so this is what I want to talk about today. I always carry a passing interest in spring football, but not to the degree in which I'm going to tune in every week and watch it.
Right.
I'm probably not the intended audience because up until really a year or two ago, my professional schedule revolved around traditional American football, college, essentially, and then I am an active NFL fan against my doctor's recommendation. So I need a break.
Sure.
And I assume, like, you're the same, right? We worked in the college football ecosystem as media. you have an NFL interest. We all, you know, everyone in America is legally required to watch the NFL playoffs. And then it's, there's this theory out there. We're going to talk to someone about this today that, well, all of America, hundreds and millions and billions of people are watching football and then it just stops.
Yeah.
But all sports stop for a little while.
Yes. Yeah. Soccer, English soccer is the one that feels like it doesn't do that. But yeah. even they stop.
So today's question is, how do we understand spring football?
Okay.
Because we, America, the big editorial we, as one united people, all in agreement on everything, really seem to think we need more football.
Yeah, we've been trying this for quite a while now.
So by my count, the UFL is basically the fifth sort of organized attempt, and that's a little disingenuous, but fifth in almost a decade, because some of these interesting consortiums have sort of like paired off and become the same thing, whatever. If you don't know, the UFL is a mixture of the XFL.
The second version of the XFL,
that wasn't the Vince McMahon XFL right. of yore, and the USFL. Okay?
Uh-huh.
The owners of the current UFL, 50% is owned by Fox. And then it's a mixture of a group called Redbird Capital, and Dwayne The Rock Johnson and yep. his ex-wife and current business partner, Danny Garcia.
Okay.
There has not been a lot of Rock this year. In fact, he missed the opening weekend like festivities on TV and like was absent. And a lot of people think that maybe this is sort of contributing to what I'm about to talk about. Okay. Right? Last year, Ryan, the UFL title game drew 1.59 million viewers on Fox.
Shout out to Skip Holtz in Birmingham.
Skip Holtz, coaching legend. The game's average, like the pull all the games in, create just a basic average, 816,000 viewers per game.
Okay.
All right. I want you to kind of hold the 800,000 viewers in your head. Regardless, you may not know anything about television viewership.
Sure.
None of us should. And this is one of the ideas I'm going to explore today is why we, me and you, random guy in a bar, millions of people on social media are always talking about television ratings.
Yeah.
None of us, to my knowledge, own a television network.
No.
Nor are we purchasing ads on a television
network.
I
enjoy doing the show with you. If I owned a television network, I would not be podcasting.
Oh, well, you know, all right, we'll talk about that later.
Okay.
That was a little...
that was hurtful. I'm sorry.
It's good to know where your priorities are. Jeez. God. In its first 3 weeks this season, and it debuted as a spring league, the league was down a third, 33% in total viewership. The week one debut was on a Friday night. It drew about 700,000 versus the 1.8 that it drew on a Saturday afternoon for a debut last year. I'm going to breeze through some of this, and I'm going to eliminate some context in how we determine total viewership, what you're up against. But this has been television ratings are manipulated to a point now where networks themselves are putting this out to consumers, not to industry media, but to random people.
Yeah.
It's really, really popular to do this in college football and say, oh, well, the Big Ten had the biggest audience or the SEC had the biggest audience, but it's used in partisan media, it's used in political media. It's kind of nonsense, but I'm trying to establish a baseline here. On April 25th, there was a game between Birmingham and Memphis that drew 467,000 viewers on Fox, like straight up Fox.
Wow.
The regular Fox.
Yeah.
If you don't know now, you're getting into a really, really low number of total audience for something that's airing on the basic, like, big four networks, okay? This game went up against the NFL draft, like the latter rounds of the NFL draft on the last day, the NBA playoffs, the NHL playoffs, etc. The weekend of the NFL draft, because it's the same logic of like, oh, well, it's football in America. We want more football in America. The NFL owns draft weekend.
Yeah.
They own pretty much whatever they want to right now. They're operating in total manifest destiny. That kind of explains how bad it was. The next night, St. Louis and Michigan drew a higher total. It was about 615,000 because it was on ESPN. And that bump was because they transitioned out of the end of the draft and then straight into the broadcast.
Okay.
Every number I've pulled, and I'm going to have some positive ratings info here in a second, is that people aren't showing up. People aren't tuning in. It's just not a thing. It's not something people are watching casually, except it's football. Hold that thought. Remember, okay. 800,000, hold that thought. Yeah. It's football. And how we judge something because it's football, I think, is very different in America. Another problem for the UFL is that three coaches have left their position, kind of walked off the job since March. Reggie Barlow left the DC team to replace Eddie George at Tennessee State. That happened in late March. Ken Whisenhut, you remember him, go Cardinals?
Yeah.
He left the Memphis team just, quote, to step away from football in April. And then Wade Phillips left San Antonio for a leave of absence, personal reasons, in mid-April. In addition to that, you had three coordinators. Bruce Gradkowski went to the Lions to fill an open position. Kind of understandable there. Like that, you know, you're going to go and take an NFL coaching job. The San Antonio offensive coordinator left, and the a young whippersnapper of a defensive coordinator named Greg Williams. It's that Greg Williams left DC to go to Tennessee State with Barlow. Okay. Also, what you haven't heard about the UFL this season is anything anecdotal, novelty, meme, as the youths might say.
I only can think of one thing that has sort of broken through for me, and I think based on the face you're making, I think you're going to tell me
what's that one thing that made it into your feed, into your bubble, into your zeitgeist.
Puka Nacua's brother, whose first name I don't remember because I think he has two brothers, maybe playing.
This one's named Samson.
Okay. Who plays for the Panthers, if memory serves, like, got into... Did he punch a fan?
He slapped him.
He slapped a fan.
Open hand, sort of like, British duel energy.
Yeah.
But not.
That's not good.
Yeah.
I wouldn't recommend that. Although, like I said, it is the one thing that sort of, like, broke through my shroud of ignorance and was like, oh, that's a thing that happened in that league.
Nacua slapped a fan. He plays for the Michigan team. He did this in St. Louis. In St. Louis, this is why I was sort of happy and stunned that you were like, I saw Battlehawks.
I saw one in the wild. Yeah.
The UFL is a wild success in St. Louis.
Yeah.
The NFL, whatever. Stadium things are stadium things.
Yeah.
We don't need it. That's not today's
episode.
That's
a whole separate thing. Yeah.
About 30,000 people are willing to go to a Battlehawks game.
That's pretty good.
Raise hell inside the old TWA Dome, whatever it's called now.
Yeah.
And the great thing about old domes especially is, like, they're loud. They're weird. It just sounds like a lot of people screaming in a shopping mall.
Yeah,
and so it, like, creates a fun environment.
It's like a fight in a Costco.
Mm-hmm. No one should ever fight in Costco. It's the happiest place on earth. Yes, I am wearing New Balances. Other than St. Louis, there's been a marginal increase in attendance for the Michigan team.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, attendance is really down.
Okay.
The warm weather environments are not doing particularly well. So the smaller markets like Birmingham, like Memphis.
And Birmingham's had a successful team to be like
one of
some,
the best.
In some of the, like, Memphis, to the best of my recollection, not a very, like, good football team. But Birmingham has won multiple titles and, like, seems to be a well put together program.
There is, at least by the gates, a bit of indifference here. The strange thing is attendance is actually the exact same based on the stats that I looked up. It's just that it's increasing or really strong in some places and then really, really bad in others.
Can I ask you, like, a zoom out
foundational
question?
Mm-hmm.
Do you think, based on what you've sort of read and thought about and people you've talked to, do you think the UFL exists to be a successful spring business entity? Or does it have, like, is it a true developmental league? Is it, like, a rules testing ground, like minor league baseball sometimes is for major league? Like, what's the reason this exists, and what would be, like, the UFL's sign of, like, yeah, we're doing well?
So when we launched Phantom Island,
yeah,
the conceit was that we would sort of ask a question and sometimes they're going to go unanswered.
Yeah.
Spoiler alert. I can't figure out what we're doing here.
Okay.
And this is why
okay.
we're going to ask these questions today. Okay. We're going to talk to Justice Mosqueda in a second, who is on our side of the fence in the media now, but he worked for the XFL during the adjudicated COVID season.
Mm-hmm.
So he worked on the player personnel side, and I thought, well, who better to ask these questions to than someone who actually was there, who understands roster evaluation, who looked at, like, how do we put a balance of good players on good teams? What do you prioritize? Like, quarterback play, all this stuff. So we're going to get there in a second. The criticism right now, it's funny because you can kind of pick anything you want to say about the UFL right now, and this is why I'm so fascinated with it. I don't have a fix for you. I don't know if anyone has a fix, which is sort of the bigger question of, like, what are we doing here?
Mm-hmm.
No one is indicting the sport, and I'm gonna get to this in a second. Remember, 800,000 fans in football, okay? But I mean, no one's looking at it and saying, "Well, football's not gonna work in America." But we keep trying this thing. No one really seems to have a mission statement. It's very expensive to run a football league, it turns out, and so these things are always at risk because there's not a mission statement at first and the cycle continues. Okay. The beer snake eats itself. Shout out to the DC Defenders. That's all I know about the DC Defenders is I like their uniforms. Cardell Jones played quarterback for them, and they make a beer snake at the MLS stadium that they play in every game, which is great. Honestly, like, they probably need more minor league energy. On a serious note, a lot of the coverage that I've read, and it's out there if you dig, shout out to anybody who's like week to week hitting some UFL coverage, is that they do need to adopt a little more like a sort of stadium event mindset, the way minor league baseball and minor league hockey do, mm-hmm. where it's like, you don't know the players necessarily that you're coming out to see. Civic pride isn't really working in Memphis and Birmingham, so it's like, come out and have fun.
Yeah.
Like, cheap beer and the kids can run around.
It's an
like,
accessible thing to do that's not your house and will be a little silly.
Yes. So as we record this, and I'm actually going to kind of put a timestamp on this because this isn't going to air as we're recording this, right. But I also don't think anyone is going to think, oh, this isn't accurate and up-to-date coverage of the unfolding UFL season. There's a couple problems as they hit the home stretch, which is that the parity is so wide between the small group of teams that with a couple weeks left to play in the regular season, Ryan, everything's determined.
Okay.
So we essentially have exhibition games as we record this in late May until the playoff structure starts.
Yeah.
It's a lot of fait accompli, yep. if you will, which yep. we use, yeah, you know, a lot of Latin refrains.
Which, like, part of me just thinks, like, we'll just call the season, just wrap it, just start the playoffs right away. Who cares? But that's maybe not a logical answer.
I'm going to jump ahead for a second and talk about 800,000 fans and why I keep saying this.
Yeah.
We had a good weekend this past weekend, which is why I've been kind of monitoring this, except that it really just, it's more of a point of pride. I'm going to read you something. Things got better this past weekend. Sunday's thriller between Arlington and DC averaged 973,000 viewers.
Okay.
With over 1.2 million tuned in for the second half of the game. It was a matchup that went down to the wire. I believe it was 33-30. Like, okay. A good game.
Yep.
But unfortunately, it got moved to ESPN2 for the final minutes due to NBA coverage on ABC. I thought, oh, that makes sense. The game... No. The very beginning of the pregame show for the Oklahoma Thunder Denver Nuggets eventual broadcast bumped it off, which obviously is going to significantly impact your rating.
Yeah.
I'm not here to argue that. Because the actual game, pregame shows exist to sort of ramp people up and condition an audience. It's a call to action. 6.3 million people, by the way, if you're curious, watch that game 7. Okay, that's an established American sport. Like, that makes sense. This is the perspective I wanted to get at. We are talking about a sport that's in a dire strait, and it averaged 816,000 viewers for basically its first month per game.
Mm-hmm.
We're saying that that's bad. What do you think the average viewing audience for the Major League Baseball broadcast, the Sunday night baseball broadcast on ESPN was last season? If you took all the Sunday night broadcasts, which are always loaded to the bigger teams.
Right.
So it's like New York, Boston,
Dodgers,
St. Louis, LA, yeah. Braves, Cardinals, Cubs. Like,
shot in the dark, 1.5 million.
You nailed it, literally.
Wow.
1.5. It was 1.5 and change, but for the sake of this conversation.
Okay. And that's a sport where there's a lot of like, internal angst about what the direction that it's going and how well it's succeeding.
Well, and also that was America's pastime for a long time.
Sure.
So now let's talk about football. I have another question. Mm. Right now, you're a businessman.
Yeah.
You have money. Congratulations.
Sure.
The recording studio that we're in right now mm-hmm. is just filled with like cash, Walter White style, covered in a tarp.
We did it.
It's awesome. We have to clean our cash now, and I want you to figure out, should I dump my money for an investment, a long-term investment? What would feel safer to you right now, Ryan? The NHL or the UFL? The National Hockey League or the UFL?
Probably the National Hockey League.
It's, sure, why?
Yeah, because it's survived multiple like fracture events.
Mm-hmm.
And it's expanded. It has a better television situation than it did a few years ago.
Okay.
Like, I'm not necessarily like, boy, everything's coming up roses in the NHL, but like, yeah, you're asking me, would I bet on this brand that's, you know, got over 100 years of history, or would I go with this startup that, if you ask me, is one of these, if you had to say one of these is dead in 5 years, I'd definitely pick the UFL.
Right. So you wouldn't want to put your money in it, right? Okay.
No.
Do you know what the average playoff viewership per game is right now? as we record this, the NHL is in the final. Basically, I think we're in the final four right now. Edmonton, Dallas.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember the East.
Florida and Carolina.
Another banner year for the NHL.
Nine baseball is doing a million and a half. I don't think this is
playoffs.
Yeah,
baby.
I'll say two.
886,000 viewers.
That's not the number I wanted. Okay.
It's the same as the UFL, give or take about 60,000-70,000 viewers.
Yeah.
This is the context that I'm talking about.
But football is graded on a different scale, I think, is what you're
I'm getting
towards.
To that also, but yeah. Inarguably, like, I go to NHL games every year. Their ratings are up in Canada because of the Canadian teams that have been involved.
Right.
But long term, the NHL isn't going anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
So why is the UFL in trouble at 816,000, whereas the NHL, it's not great. It's not a great situation, but no one's worried about the NHL folding, right?
Well, let me throw out a few possibilities. One, NHL is probably almost certainly making more money off tickets and local sponsorships and things like that. NHL is probably also, like, there's no local broadcast, as far as I know, of a UFL game, but the NHL can sell local broadcasts and things like that.
You got it, right.
So there's probably enough other ways that hockey brings in money and revenue where they're not, I'm sure they're not happy with the number that you're laying out, but it's not the end. It's not the only sort of, like, measure of, is this working?
Okay, so if this is working or not working, it would be evaluation on all those non-television rating things. Even though TV ratings, for the purpose of this exercise, I'm trying to illustrate, hey, they dominate the quick conversation on social media, press releases, etc. They don't really tell the story because the health of the UFL at 800,000 viewers a game is not good because of all of these other pieces of context. Mm-hmm. People don't care. No one's going to go, like, no one's going to spend the offseason buying, you know, an Arlington, what are they called? Renegade? Jersey, right? Yeah. The NHL is going to be fine. In its core markets especially. Also, there's an entire culture of human beings that play ice hockey. Mm-hmm. Like, we're not worried about this. Ratings are down. Does the league have problems? Absolutely. Can I make a future Phantom Island with someone in the hockey media and be like, they've got to do five or six things. Like, they've got to change the... Yeah, absolutely. I can, definitely. Yeah. No one wants to listen to that from a Southern American. But, like, yes, I have thoughts on the NHL.
Yeah.
But the UFL lacks on a fundamental level for all the other business sort of components that make a successful league.
There's also one other sort of potential issue here, which is that the NHL is always, or at least for the foreseeable future, that's where top flight hockey talent is going to go.
Yes.
There is no alternative league. But the UFL, as NIL has increased in college football, that's probably cut off, like, some people who, like, why would you go leave to play for the UFL when you could make good NIL money? And also, the NFL is still there and practice squads are still there and there's no reason, like, other, I don't know. It feels like
it feels like
the natural sort of, like, this is where you go to play your sport at the highest level is guaranteed for the NHL, and it will never be true for the UFL.
Yeah, and maybe, like, when I talk about minor league baseball and minor league hockey, you know, a big reason to go to a minor league baseball game is to see
a future
star or maybe just someone on a quick rehab stint or whatever, right?
Yes, it's one of the best parts about going to a minor league stadium is seeing, like, how they highlight, here's where, like, this guy came up.
So we're talking about play quality to a degree.
Yeah.
The bigger criticism or sort of explanation in the media's eyes for why this thing started so flat, aside from the fact that, like, it did seem, and this isn't something you can really measure empirically, that, like, the UFL had just sort of left whatever little conversation it was having last spring.
Mm-hmm.
We weren't having that conversation.
Yeah.
But we can't measure that. I know there are plenty of agencies that try to and, you know, feed social media into some sort of metric or whatever. But a big talking point was the quality of the football and what was the purpose of the football and why are we engaging with the football on the field. So Drew Lerner of Awful Announcing wrote this after the first month. Through 12 games of the season, only one has seen both teams score over 20 points. 10 out of 12 games have seen at least one team score 12 or fewer points. The UFL is not producing an attractive brand of football. At the end of the day, no matter how great the television windows are, no matter how great the production quality is, it's just all putting lipstick on a pig. If the quality of play isn't there, there's not really much for people to get excited about. This is where, my friend, you and I think we know what we're talking about, but we're going to bring in our buddy Justice because, and I'm about to bring this up with him, I sure do remember millions and millions of people watching LSU and Alabama play a 9-6 football game in 2011, right?
Yeah.
Iowa football exists, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So the NFL, the development aspect, and what kind of football we're playing and why is the second part of this conversation we're going to have with Justice. This episode of Phantom Island is brought to you by our friends at Homefield Apparel. Right now, you can go to Homefield Apparel. That would be, obviously, homefieldapparel.com. If you're a first-timer, you can sign up with your email to get 10% off everything. You can check out the new summer school hats. You can, I would say very quickly, purchase a Indianapolis 500 bomber jacket. And then also, if you're following the college baseball, there's an entire college baseball collection. If college baseball is on your mind currently, I know what you're thinking. While I wish there was apparel that was specific to college baseball and not just the sort of college in general, they have that. They have Diamond Classics. They have some very fine wares for you to support college baseball. As you're listening to this, we are rounding out towards Super Regionals and actually going to Omaha. So what better time to purchase college baseball paraphernalia, college baseball apparel, college baseball support material than by going to homefieldapparel.com right now? We thank Homefield for their support of Phantom Island.
Ryan, we're not qualified. Well, we're not really qualified to do any of this stuff. We're definitely not qualified from like a football schematic standpoint to talk about this. So I did drum up someone who probably can actually answer some of these questions. Justice, could you introduce yourself and please provide credentials?
Yes, sir. My name is Justice Mosqueda. I was the director of analytics for Optimum Scouting, which ran the player pool for XFL 2020.
All right. Okay. Thank you for joining. I'm going to throw it directly in your lap. Is minor league football just is it a myth? Is it just like ever going to sustain itself in America? Are we fooling ourselves? And should we be doing something else with our lives in April?
That's a big question and question, you know, we try to solve for a little bit. I think the way we at XFL 2020 thought of it was there's an appetite here for football, especially considering there wasn't really any petering out, right? You have, you know, the big drum up to, you know, the Super Bowl, right? And then everything just stops and people are used to looking at their fantasy lineups, or they're used to conditioned to watching these games on the weekends for, you know, months, and then it just all goes away one day, right? And, you know, XFL, I think they really tried to parlay the end of the NFL season into their season in a way some of these spring leagues haven't, right? Like I think we were supposed to be, I mean, we didn't even finish one season, right? So, you know, hard for me to tell other people.
To be fair, that was 2020. Other things happened. It wasn't like you guys, oh, damn, we didn't pay the light bill.
Right, exactly. But we were supposed to be wrapped up around draft weekend, right? And, you know, clearly there's still spring leagues stuff going on in mid-May when we're recording this. So, I think that's a question. The question of minor league is also a pretty interesting question too. So like we had, so the guy running our league essentially, right? Vince McMahon had all the money, but the guy who was actually, you know, running it from a day-to-day basis was Oliver Luck. And Oliver Luck had been informed from his experience in NFL Europe. And his whole idea was you can't really run it like a minor league. Because the problem is, you know, especially with the NFL and how they have expanded their rosters and they've expanded their practice squads. Like practice squads used to be like six guys in like the early 2010s. And now it's 16 dudes, right? The way NFL Europe used to operate, they used to basically send like their fourth string quarterbacks to Europe, guys that they like didn't even really want to keep around, because they didn't want other teams to poach them and have these kind of, lack of a better word, opportunities to kind of like showcase their talent, right? So we kind of had to make that decision to operate outside of the structure of the NFL. And that's not to say that we didn't have relationships with people in the league, but we certainly weren't like striving to have, you know, we're going to be the Browns minor league team, right? We're going to develop players for the Cleveland Browns. That's what the purpose of this team is. So we always talked about it as spring league. We never talked about it as sort of like minor league, even though, you know, I understand why people would frame it that way. But I think we, because of how many people that we had working who had experience in NFL Europe, wanted to stay away from the idea of, you know, being a minor league.
Is minor league the wrong phrase to use just because the NFL doesn't require it? Because, you know, if I draft the best pitcher in a draft class in Major League Baseball, the absolute best prospect is still going to need 2 to 3 years of development outside of my league. You would never throw a 17-year-old pitcher out there against major league talent on day one, and that will probably never change in our lifetime. The same can't be said in this sport. So is it just that fundamentally that we should change the way we look at outside NFL football leagues?
Maybe. I mean, XFL 2020, we did have conversations about kids straight from high school, but we never got close to it.
Okay.
So it was something that we had like bounced around, but we kind of knew, like, once you open that door is open, right? So you better be kind of sure about it. So we weren't comfortable with it year one. We did have, spacing on his name right now, we had the safety out of West Virginia who got kicked out of West Virginia for academics, I believe, ended up coming to XFL and then got drafted by the Carolina Panthers, I think the sixth round that next season. So, like, we, you know, dipped our toe in a player who is not eligible for the NFL draft, but we didn't go full-blown high school level. I think the biggest thing with minor league is just the notion of you have a relationship with the other league, and therefore they can kind of control some of the personnel decisions that you make, which is, you know, what I was dealing with on a day-to-day basis. So I guess that was the most important thing to me. I mean, other people might tell you something different.
Kenny Robinson.
Yes, sir.
Yep. West Virginia product, Kenny Robinson.
St. Louis Battlehawks, caca.
All right, I want to ask you about quality of play. There's a variety outside of the NFL. It seems that, and again, you worked in personnel, so you'd be better capable of answering this. There's a drop-off at every position if you're comparing, let's just say, the average NFL backup at offensive, defensive line, linebacker, et cetera. But there seems to be kind of like a gulf with quarterback play specifically. And even with UFL performing pretty well last year as that sort of debut of the combined league, there was a lot of energy, a ton of PR and marketing. You still saw quarterback play that the average beer-holding American on their couch would probably be able to sort of point at the television and the DiCaprio meme and identify as like bad across the league.
Yeah, 100%. And, you know, that's something we worked on a lot. XFL, you know, the quarterbacks were getting paid, I'm just ballparking off the top of my head, like at least 3 times more than every other position. Everyone else basically got, you know, a flat rate. And then the quarterbacks were what really, the starting quarterbacks, I should say, got paid really well. We worked with DPPs, which were directors of player personnel. Teams did not have sitting general managers in the way that you think of general managers. The head coaches were head coaches and general managers, but the top front office specific position for each individual team was a DPP for us. And we worked with the DPPs and coaches to basically allocate quarterbacks, you know, outside of the structure of our drafts, right? And we basically got them the guys that they wanted. Now, were those always the best decisions and decisions that we at Optimum Scouting would have made? No. You know, Aaron Murray was starting games. He was a designated quarterback. We probably wouldn't have made that decision. But there were some guys like Josh Johnson, right?
Mm-hmm.
No brainer, of course. Yes, Josh Johnson is going to be a starting quarterback at, you know, in this league. I think we did a good job evaluating guys like, you know, Jordan Ta'amu, Luis Perez. You know, the thing that really helped us with the XFL was the AAF had just come off of a season, right? And they had disbanded. So we got a lot of recent film on a lot of these guys, and we were able to evaluate from there. You're right in that it's quarterback, but I will say right after quarterback, we got to get right on the offensive line. Like we almost structured our draft around teams need offensive linemen. So we had If you guys remember back in 2020, we had a draft that was like a position specific draft. So we had like the skill players, the offensive linemen, defensive front seven, and then defensive backs. Those were all separate drafts. And the reason for that was we didn't want some air raid coaches coming in and not addressing the offensive line situation until the 20th damn round of the draft. And then their games are unwatchable, right? For us,
yeah,
you know, Eric Galco, who's a CEO of Optimum Scouting. I can't remember what his title is. He's a big man. He was my boss man. He always joked that, you know, his ideal situation is, you know, everyone goes 500, right? He just wanted watchable football games out there from a talent level perspective. And offensive lineman, man, I'm sure you guys see it when, you know, a Jeff Saturday goes on TV and you're like, that guy's dropped 50 pounds very quickly. That is pretty crazy. Like, there were guys in the AAF that we had ranked like top five players at their position on the offensive line. And then we hit up their agents and they'd be like, yeah, dude, he's down 45 pounds already. Like, no, he's not going to be. So like, we're trying to find these gems that were like, oh, they should have been picked up by the NFL, but they're 1 year out of, you know, that cycle and their weight is already just like, nah, man, they're retired. Well, they're not doing this again.
Let me back up then, because there's a quarterback specific bias in these roster builds. And then you said there's offensive line and you've used the phrase watchable football as the goal.
Yes.
So what is watchable football? Because I know, Ryan, you know, I'm not having a sort of mental break here. I, as a professional, attended an LSU Alabama game in 2011 that ended 9-6. And it was considered, you know, at the time, the game of the century of the week, whatever at the time. Like, we've all seen horrific football by our own personal standards. Iowa is a university that operates, they put out a football product every year that is basically, you know, a grave offense to the idea of offensive football. So we see bad football all the time. Thursday nights in the NFL got, you know, has earned a particular kind of reputation. So what is watchable football? And what is possible in watchable football when you don't have access to the best players in the sport or even the second or third best players?
Yeah. So I think execution is important, like intent, right? So that Alabama LSU game that you're talking about, right? They wanted to make that a slugfest, right? They wanted a run clock. They want to make that a slugfest. The game went how they wanted it to go. Our biggest worry is, you know, you get an air raid team out there and they can't complete a pass, right? And everyone knows, you know, incomplete pass, that's not how it was supposed to go. At least, you know, if you're running the ball, you get 3 yards of carry, right? You can at least say, like, you know, maybe that's how that should have gone, but an incomplete pass is not a great thing. Now, yeah, I mean, that was kind of our, what kept us up at night. It was, are we good enough at quarterback? Are we good enough on the offensive line? There are so many great, talented defenders that's never really an issue for these spring leagues. Just in terms of, you know, you can get a stop, right? Scoring isn't, you know, through the
roof. So America creates more defensive football players that are capable than they do offensive players?
Outside of the offensive skill positions. Yeah. I mean, offensive linemen, quarterbacks. Yeah. I mean, offensive line and quarterbacks are where the deficiencies are. Everything else, you're good, which is the unfortunate thing, right? Because I don't want to just say like scoring equals good, right?
Right.
But offensive line and quarterback being bad and being scoring equals bad and equals execution equals bad. And people start to tune out.
So as we're walking through what watchable football is, and you define it as intent being sort of the ability to execute your plan, what in your experience and expertise is the best plan at this level for if I'm the UFL, what is it air raid? Should, you know, they all listen to me as everyone should and just immediately start running the triple option? Let's just get B-backs in there. And
like, I think you know, what Steven's trying to ask is, why is Skip Holtz the greatest coach in UFL history?
I mean, things are working, although I couldn't really explain why.
Yeah. And he's doing it with a different quarterback every year too, right? Like, that's one of the craziest parts. Buddy, if you want to run the option, go run the option. You're not going to hear it differently from me. Maybe the people running our, you know, medical insurance stuff feel differently, but
I just want to go to the Fox executives with the solution, like with a cardboard briefcase and walk in and like a t-shirt that has the picture of the suit on it. Just be like, gentlemen, the UFL, no passing. Everyone just needs to fall forward at 2.5 yards at a time. This is going to solve your television concerns. No, I assume it is not something as simplified as the triple, but I guess like just pro versus air raid. Was there like one where you guys found like, oh, that's it?
So this would 2020. We're coming off of the tail of the McVay stuff, right? So I think that really started to catch on, and you could see guys like Luis Perez really start to do well. I think at the AAF level, if I remember this correctly, the Birmingham Iron basically ran like a copy paste of the McVay offense, and their offense was actually pretty cool. So I think that works. The other thing too is like all of the RPO stuff, right? Like I know St. Louis was running a bunch of basically, you know, modern RPO, like, you know, tight ends off the ball, all that stuff. You're throwing slants, you're throwing glances. And I think that stuff worked. You know, I wouldn't advise, I think it was San Diego. Mike Martz was the head coach of San Diego in the AAF. And they were running like legit under center split back, like Kurt Warner era West Coast offense stuff. Wouldn't advise that. I don't think that's going to work at this level.
Why is that going to fail particularly?
You just have too many guys in the backfield, right? It's the same reason it's kind of gone away in college football, and it's gone away in at the NFL level, where it's just you're if you're going to throw the ball, you're going to need guys to go deep, and there's a lot of different protection rules, I guess I would say. With those two guys in the backfield, and it just doesn't match up to what modern defenses are throwing at you.
Okay. I want to go back to, if you're not a minor league, then you're something, you're your own entity.
Mm-hmm.
I know you only worked in this for a short amount of time, and then like worldwide catastrophic plague and all that kind of stuff shut you down, and you have since moved on in your career. Do you, in your short time there, did you feel like you guys were getting closer to determining that spring football would be an entity unto itself, almost the way the Arena League was? Or did you think the overall plan could have moved closer towards a Division II or subdivision, if you will, of the NFL, where the focus could have been more on the individual names? Was it going to be the show, or was it going to be the stars, or does it have to be both?
Yeah, it was just the way we viewed it was like, it's a different product, right? We understand, you know, the NFL is going to do its own thing. We didn't want to have that relationship with the NFL, but we did want to be, you know, kind of just a different league that you could watch, right? Where, you know, if you weren't tapped into NHL playoffs or NBA playoffs or whatever it might be, that maybe you want to spend your weekend with us, right? And that's kind of the way we looked at it. We thought, you know, ratings wise, we thought we were successful and all that stuff. We were hitting the metrics that we wanted to hit. The one big question that we had was, and we never got to the finish line on this, right? Because I think we were gone like second, third week of March, something like that. Was how we dealt with March Madness, and that was going to be a big kind of, I guess, like proof of concept type of situation, because we never had to go head to head with them. There's kind of that lull between the end of the Super Bowl and then, you know, March Madness, and then you go into the winter sport playoffs, right? NHL, NBA. And we really wanted to know, we were at least a little worried about what our ratings would be when we're going head to head with March Madness, and we never got to see what that was like.
Other than the offensive line guys, you know, being sort of drastically underweight, did you find the interest level matched from the personnel side as you guys were recruiting? Because we're seeing, you know, the UFL this year has kind of had a spate of on the coaching side guys. They come up with different reasons and different public explanations, but it does look like guys are just sort of quitting out of disinterest. What was it like with the players?
Yeah, the players are usually excited. I think one thing that people don't realize is how damn much insurance costs for these players at the professional level. And it's something that it's a massive cost that I think people don't consider enough. So we had like
former NFL first round picks, second round picks that we would have to turn down because of their medical situation. Because I think people look at these spring leagues and they're like, oh yeah, just take the injury risk guys. That's not a winning proposition. Like if you're on the table, like the margins are so slim. Like I'll explain this way, right? Like Optimum Scouting had a job with the XFL because it was more efficient money wise for to have a central scouting department than individual teams. Now, individual teams did scout players, but in terms of adding players to the player pool, getting their background checks passed, going through medicals, all those things, that's why we were able to kind of fill a void to just kind of roll the dice on injury risks across the board is not a winning proposition. You kind of have to pick and choose in those situations. So outside of that, pretty good reception from a talent standpoint. There weren't many players who went into our player pool and then ended up backing out. We got pretty competitive with some Canadian quarterbacks at certain points and almost poached them from the CFL, but a lot of them stood with the league that had 100 plus years in history, and I don't really blame them for that.
Okay, so if I put you in charge of the UFL tomorrow, I'm sorry, but I'm doing this.
Pandemic, no.
What is the first area of concern? Is it the marketing? Because the media coverage of this season has centered around television ratings are declining, inarguably. Stadium attendance is declining, inarguably. Now, the reason for those things, which is why we're here today, there's a pretty fierce chicken-egg debate going on. Do you lean hard, like we talked about in our opening segment, with, you know, Memphis is just going to go pure minor league baseball. It's family fun. Come out. There's a football game going on, but there's $2 hot dogs. Hey, you might remember this guy from this university that you watched on, you know, remember that guy from that SEC team that you saw that night? Like, he's on here now. Or do you continue on that XFL 20 path of let's try to distinguish ourselves as a unique brand inside the greater umbrella of football?
All politics are local, right? So I think you have to kind of individualize the brand for some of these teams because they are different. You look at what St. Louis is able to do. You look at what DC is able to do. They have a culture around these teams already, right?
Right.
Like you can lean into that. And then also not have a one size fits all, like, oh, what we're doing for St. Louis and DC, we're just going to copy paste and do that for Memphis, right? The one thing I would change off the rip, I'm moving the schedule back to when we did in XFL 2020. And I'm having it right after the Super Bowl and, you know, trying to finish up before the draft. It's crazy that I believe this year, the first week of March Madness is when the UFL kicked off.
Yes. Who's watching that? I've talked to you about this previously when the other leagues came in post after your time in XFL. What are you just doing this just to get out of the way of larger tentpole events? Or do you think that there's some sort of, I don't know, like mental muscle memory we have as football consumers where the second that the Super Bowl's over, that's when you need to jump in? Like those really depressing weeks in February, you're like, here's some football product to get you through until like March 10th.
So it's really three things, right? It's, you know, the exact thing that you're talking about where you're kind of riding that wave off of the Super Bowl. Everyone's accustomed to football. Let's kind of fill that void. It's getting out of big tentpole events, which you're still going to have to compete with March Madness at some point. It's just choosing when to do it. I think week one of the season, pretty bad decision. I'm not a TV executive. I would rather have a bigger week one share than what they're getting from, you know, going head to head with March Madness. And then the last thing is the timing of players and when they can get to the NFL. So if you're wrapped up by the draft, you can have these guys go on, you know, these tryout rookie minicamp stuff, you know, right after the draft, you know, and they have what, like 6 weeks off before training camp, let their body heal at least a little bit in between playing two professional football seasons back to back. I haven't looked at the numbers specifically, but I would imagine that there are fewer guys getting opportunities for NFL training camps out of the spring league once the date gets pushed forward, just because of how many rosters get filled with, you know, undrafted free agents, stuff like that, or you know, teams just worried about these guys being banged up right after the season.
Okay, so if I'm still adhering to like the laws of biology and physics, and we're only going to play a tackle football game every 7 days, okay, and you're going to go in the day after the Super Bowl, how long is this? How long is this season? When is the drop dead point to get away from basketball and still also keep these guys? You've got two things I'm trying to solve for here, and you're helping me. One is, let's create an entire football season, finger quotes, right? Entice the best talent we can without sacrificing any, even if it's a 2% chance that they might be able to go in and make a camp going into training camp, like go in after the draft. So are we talking 6 weeks here?
No, because I think we had like I believe we had a 10-week season with two weeks of playoffs, is what I believe what was scheduled. So probably closer to 3 months. Yeah. But yeah, get in and out. I mean, I don't see why there's anything wrong with that. Especially from if we're going to do the whole, you know, ratings, attendance, all that argument, when do you start getting negative returns on having an even longer season, right? I think that's kind of the way you want to structure it. Start training camp at probably midway through December, start games early February, and then just go through the draft. And then once teams have these rookie mini camps or doing OTAs, all this stuff, start sending guys out and say, hey, good luck. If you don't catch on to a 53 or a practice squad, we'll see you guys next year.
By the way, would anyone like to guess, this might be funnier for me, someone with seasonal affective disorder, that the amount of time between the end of the Super Bowl and the start of March Madness?
What is it, like 45 days-ish?
Selection Sunday is March 16th, and we played the Super Bowl on February 9th this year.
Okay.
So this is your moment if you are the UFXAAFL, whatever. Right? This is when you're talking about. We're creating a seasonal affective sport. Okay. All right. Perfect. All right, Justice, thank you for coming on. Thank you for solving this problem with us. Where can people find you?
Yeah. I write about the Green Bay Packers for Acme Packing Company. If you guys want to check that out, if you're not a Packers fan, sorry.
Thanks again to Justice Mosqueda. Thank you for listening. That was another episode of Phantom Island. We'll be back next week with a new topic, a new idea, a new question to ask. In the meantime, you want to support us? You want to get ready for what's coming? PhantomIsland.show. Become a subscriber. Become a member today. PhantomIsland.show. I promise, if you're a longtime listener of maybe my work specifically in the audio space, consider this an Easter egg all the way at the end of the podcast track. You might be interested in the next episode, but you can only hear it in its entirety by going to phantomisland.show and signing up really fast, really soon. I would really do it before Friday, June 6th. Love you.